looking for.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
All right, Drew King, welcome to the Member Guest Podcast. It's been a long time coming. I think we've been talking about it since I went out and visited you in Aiken, South Carolina. Is that right? That's where you guys are based out of?
Yeah, Batesburg to be specific, but yeah, Aiken County, 30 minutes outside of Aiken. So yeah, you're spot on.
Okay, yeah, I got that wrong. We're off to a hot start.
Nah, it's all good. The population of Batesburg is low enough where if you don't know the name, it's fine.
But you couldn't even run a caddy program out of just all of Batesburg. Head pro at Tree Farm down in South Carolina. Obviously, everybody that I play golf with has heard about the Tree Farm now. I'm repping the hat. Got the hole-in-one plaque behind me that may have been strategically positioned here on the podcast. But quick introduction before we kind of jump into the pod here for all of our listeners who are mainly out of Minnesota. But, you know, maybe over the past year, it's been growing. We've been getting a little bit more of a following, so it's been kind of cool.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, so originally from the Boston area, so I know all about the cold winters, as do you guys up there. So, but yeah, grew up 8 miles north of the city, small town called Woburn, Mass. Shout out to Woo, friends, family, still kind of back home. I'm the only smart one that moved south to get out of the winter. And I did so kind of after graduating high school, you know, was a somewhat of a decent high school player, but definitely was super focused on kind of getting involved in the business of golf, and had a friend that was a senior when I was a freshman that went to Methodist University. He went and studied kind of the professional golf management down there and came back home. He was a homebody, but did some great internships kind of around our little town there, and was just cool. It was cool to chat with him about what Methodist was and kind of what you know, what it was like to kind of go to school. And obviously there was a business degree that part of the university like normal, but you know, to learn the business side of golf, as I alluded to, is kind of a, you know, a thing that I was not destined to, but I guess destined to in a way, because I worked at Woburn Country Club, a small little 9-hole course where I grew up playing, scrubbing carts and, you know, taking bags from car to cart. And then in the winter I worked for a guy, Terry Felty, who owned a indoor facility in Burlington, Mass, called Big Six Golf Academy. And Big Six was a kind of a simulator, more of a come and like learn the game, not like go and party in simulators and drink and run leagues, now that, you know, those places are everywhere. But this was kind of a facility where he taught, and we had one simulator and did some stuff, but it was mainly just watched him teach, you know, all winter, and worked a little bit with juniors, and again just kind of was around the business of golf kind of early on. And went to Methodist and, you know, met the crew down there, and kind of just you know, in through internships and stuff kind of took off. So
well, so they say that if you want to play golf, you don't work in golf. Do you still you still get out to play though, right? Like, or yeah. What's that like?
No, for sure. I think, you know, for me it was like, I was, you know, the playing aspect is why, you know, I was interested in going to Methodist and why I spent all the time in the indoor and indoor facility in the winter, and then the, you know, the country club, you know, in the summer was to, at night, you jump in a cart and play 3 holes till dark, and then you go home. So yeah, the playing side of it, I always try to stay true to, you know, making sure that was definitely still part of the arsenal. You know, I joke now with kind of some people in the PGA of America of like, you know, we do all this education stuff throughout the year from a merchandise standpoint, a teaching standpoint, a, you know, you go to the PGA show and you sit in these seminars, and the only thing that we don't check in on professionals is the playing side of it. You know, there's one playing ability test you take when you get your card, and then after that, you legit don't have to put a tee in the ground to be a PGA professional. And I always felt like it was an interesting side of kind of the PGA of America of saying, hey, every 10 years, you got to go out and at least show up and show that you can kind of do it, because there's a lot of guys in our industry that don't play. And yeah, that's fine in some instances. But for me, it was, you know, I try to compete in all the section stuff. Haven't been uber successful with opening two private facilities over the last, you know, 8 years. I'll use that as an excuse. But, you know, had some great tournament rounds in South Florida where I worked right out of college. And it's just fun. You know, it's good camaraderie. It's good networking. You get to kind of hang with the guys and then go grab a beer and talk about, you know, what could have been. So it doesn't really differ from what our members and our guests do on a daily, to be truthful. So kind of try to stay true to that and keep the playing stuff as sharp as I can keep it.
Well, I mean, there's got to be an aspect of like, I mean, obviously you've got a guy like Zach Blair, and then I think Doak had his name in the Tree Farm as well. And obviously a lot of people that, that made it what it is, but is the head pro, like, you know, the head pros that I think play or at least know the game of golf, like they get it, right? Like they get the little details about a club. That's got to be what makes it good, right? I mean, there has to be an aspect to that for creating a place that like actually gets the game of golf, as opposed to a place that's like running a golf course as strictly a business, right? I think the best ones are the ones that like get the little details about the sport.
Yeah, totally. And if you look at like some of the, you know, top jobs in the country, you know, or whatever, they're majority have, you know, professionals that can play and represent their club in section events. And yeah, so to your point, I think there's a lot that goes, I mean, it's even great for us. Our assistant general manager, Kevin, like he's a scratch player and he runs F&B and lodging and he's all in on the experience side of things. But to your point, it's when golf minds can come together at a golf club that then elevates the experience on all the detail stuff. And then, you know, so yeah, it's definitely an asset if you can, you know, if you can hit a shot and someone can kind of snap their head and say, hey, that was a little different than what I do, you know. But there's definitely things that are in my game that can bring you back down to the member and guest level for sure. But
well, I've told everybody, you know, playing in Minnesota, right? Like you come back to your club and it's, you know, call it May, even early June, like when a lot of the snowbirds are starting to come back and you get the, you know, how was your winter? Like, where did you go to get out of here for a little bit? And obviously Tree Farm always comes up because it was my first hole in one. And like, I just had such a great experience there. Before Tree Farm, you were at Ahoopee. Is that correct? Like, what did you take from Ahoopee and probably the other places that you've been and all the staff that you guys have to like bring it into Tree Farm for what makes it great? Because like the way that I've described it is that, in my opinion, like it's, and you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it almost has this kind of laid back professional feeling, right? Like the entire staff, like, you know, they don't say Mr. Hagel, they say like Jordan, you know, like it has this very like friendly feeling, but at the same time, everywhere you go, everything is like boom, 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 like almost perfectly done. And like, that's the way that I really like to enjoy golf. The no carts thing was awesome. Like, where did you guys get all these ideas from that made it into what I think is one of the best golf experiences I've had? And I, you know, I haven't played everywhere, but I've played enough to be able to say like, man, this place is awesome. If you get a chance to check it out, you have to, cause it's phenomenal.
Yeah, no, totally. You know, a lot of what we did at Ahoopee, necessarily wasn't like groundbreaking and brand new, but a lot of it was different. You know, I remember, I got a call in 2017. I got a call from a buddy, John Gaeta, and he was working at a club up in East Hampton, up in Long Island, on the east end of the island. And he's like, you know, he had known I was working at a club called Admiral's Cove in Jupiter, great club, but it was an everyday, you know, 220 rounds, ladies, men's, residential. And it just wasn't, I wasn't feeling like I was fulfilled in the business. And you know, it's, as everybody knows, you got to go through the bad to find the good, right? And I think that's the case in careers and jobs and everything. So I was kind of in a spot where I was looking for something new. I was maybe going to go down the merchandising route or go work for a clothing company or kind of try to find something that was a little bit different. And you know, I remember forgetting the call, and he said, this guy just walked through the shop, one of our young members, and said, I just bought, you know, 3,000 acres in Southeast Georgia, and I'm going to build my own golf course. Gil Hance is going to design it. It's going to be for match play. And, you know, I'm super excited. And this guy was kind of like, man, that's an insane thing to just kind of say in passing, you know, and whatever. So long story short, they ended up hiring the teaching professional that was actually instructing Michael Walrath, this guy Todd Sapiri, who's the head pro to Hoopy, and he was also the director of golf at Emerald Dunes in South Florida. So my buddy John was like, hey, you got to talk to Todd. He's just been hired. He's looking to, you know, hire a lead assistant. I think it would be perfect for you. So I got in contact with Todd, and just early on, just listening to like some of the come as you are mentality things and the, you know, exclusivity and the high golf IQ and, you know, just like the emphasis on like high quality golf experiences. I was so fired up, and you would have been fired up, right? Anybody that is in and loves playing the game and loves to experience cool shit would have been really, really pumped. So, you know, I got to go up and see the property. Todd was nice enough to give me a little bit of his time, and we just hit it off. I mean, I remember being on the second fairway. I show up in a jacket and a tie, all pro'd out. Probably the worst decision of my career, to be truthful. It's like I got out of the car, and he's in shorts and untucked Grayson shirt with his hat on backwards. I'm like, and luckily I had packed some clothes because I knew we were going to play. He's like, pro. He's like, go change. He's like, that ain't going to fly here. And I was like, perfect. So, you know, we went out and played and just had a great connection in terms of what he was trying to bring. And Mike really gave us the keys to just, he always just kept saying, he's like, man, I just want this place to be a great vibe. Like, you guys know golf, you guys have been there and done that and have done it at a high level at some great places. Like, just really focus on the vibe and kind of all else will work itself out. So, you know, we were fortunate to start pretty small with a small membership. We had, you know, in the second fairway, I was like, Todd, how many members, you know, do you guys have? He's like, 16. And I'm like, you said 16? He said, yeah. I was like, you got two cabins built, 22 holes of golf, and like this crazy property where you're hunting and fishing. You got 16 members? I'm like, I'm in. Like, you know, this is, this will be fun. So, yeah, was fortunate enough to get the opportunity and, you know, went to a Hoopy, and we just, you know, we focused on kind of like what you're saying, the Ritz-Carlton, but not the shiny version, right? The subtle, rugged, you know, kind of like surprise you version of like, man, you feel like you're one, visiting your grandmother's house, two, you're experiencing high class golf, and three, everyone's just having fun. And, you know, our rule at Tree Farm and our rule at a Hoopy was, you know, just don't disrupt the person next to you. You know, I remember a guy asking when I was at a Hoopy, and we still say it now at Tree Farm, was, sir, what is your cell phone policy? And our answer was, don't bother the guy next to you. And they would like freeze, like recalibrate their brain. Like, what did you say? I said, oh, just don't bother the person next to you. Don't alter anybody's experience. Don't be that guy. And that kind of, that allows everybody to kind of interpret it how they want to interpret it. And in return, you can then experience it how you want to experience it, given there's some guidelines and some small rules, but you at least can stay in your own lane and say, hey, I'm wearing a t-shirt to dinner. I'm going to, you know, wear shorts. I'm not going to worry about wearing a jacket and a tie. Now, again, tradition at other clubs is so cool, right? Augusta National and Pinehurst and Seminole and Shinnecock, all these places have been around since the early 1900s. And I always say there's like 25 to 30 clubs that I respect their tradition. The rest of them, in my opinion, you got to kind of cater and alter to what your membership is doing from a growth standpoint. And, you know, if there's a young board that comes in that wants to allow music to be played on the range, like, I think that shouldn't be something that's just like, no, we've never done that. We're not doing that ever. To, hey, let's at least talk about it and see what other clubs are doing. And, you know, kind of evolve. But we have the opportunity at these places, these new places, to create your own tradition. So like, you know, in 100 years, they'll look back and be like, you know, that was crazy that they let t-shirts on the golf course. Like, could you believe that 100 years ago? It's like, but you know, we're just trying to carve out our own little slice, I guess. But
yeah, how do you find that fine line, right? Because it feels like as golf has changed, and I'm still, I mean, in the grand scheme of the game, like I probably started playing, you know, basically after college, so you know, only for like a decade, right? So I'm still very young in like the game of golf and traditions and all those things. But I, you know, have been to some of those clubs that have those older traditions. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you actually kind of walk that fine line of, you know, it's still a sport and like you're adhering to what made the sport great, but like this new wave, this kind of like younger generation of golf, I think, at least in my opinion, prefers kind of, you know, the way that you all are doing it and how a lot of these kind of clubs are doing it, like with the stay and play, you know, it's like the member, yeah, I've heard people say like the member plus three or member plus seven or mm-hmm. whatever it is, you know, not the everyday courses, and they're all a little bit laid back. There's got to be a fine line there. Like, how do you walk it and still also keep, you know, what makes golf kind of what makes it golf, which is a great sport for learning a lot about life and, you know, yeah. the right way to do things. You know, I think there's probably a fine line. You guys seem to walk it really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah. You get a good group of members, right? I mean, it's that's kind of, well, you know, I'll take a step back. I guess, you know, your ownership group, your board, your people at the top, like they have to believe, you know, in what you're trying to do. Right. I mean, you got to have a team that's on your side. And if you have a guest that is a little bit kind of, you know, taken back by the Jordan instead of Mr., like a team that's going to be like, well, no, that's just kind of what we do here. And it's like, okay, like, you know, kind of like, so you got to have someone that'll, you got to have a group of people that will back kind of your goals. But the second is just, if you have a great membership, they are your representation of what you are at Tree Farm and outside of Tree Farm, right? Like when our guys go to other clubs and they're rocking the logo and they have the bag tag and it says member, you know, people want to know about it. People want to hear about it. So when they're on that same wavelength as, you know, kind of the higher ups in the board, and when everybody's kind of speaking the same language, it's almost like, hey, if you're not going to be, you know, with us on this side, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb, and you know, this place may not be for you. And again, that's totally fine. Like there's been plenty of people, I'm sure, that maybe have come and not like that the new Lil Wayne album is bumping in the pro shop, or, you know, we don't have a menu and we just serve two things. And if you don't like it, like you're gonna have to maybe, you know, let us know and we'll make something work. But that, you know, or, you know, the cabins don't have TVs in the room because we force camaraderie into these small little areas. So everyone's kind of mingling and hanging out. So there's things that some people might not agree with, but at the end of the day, it's about your members and their experiences and the guests and their experiences. And if you continuously hear amazing feedback, like we've been fortunate to have, then it's just, now you're refining what you're doing and you're sharpening things. And, you know, we're so excited for this off season because we're, aside of some drainage stuff that Nick and his team are doing, we really don't have any huge big projects. So we can kind of look and say, hey, this is what worked last year. Obviously the feedback was great, but you also need like criticism in order to grow faster too. And I think the membership, if they're, you know, if it's coming from the right place, that allows your club to kind of gain some momentum to build this cool experience as well. So, you know, I remember early on ZB would, and he still does, it's pretty amazing. He'll, you know, he has access to our T-sheet and he'll text every member that's there and say, how was the Tree Farm? How was your experience? And early on, I mean, I would get screenshots of paragraphs like trash cans are in the wrong spot. There's no waters in 12 fairway. Like you got to do this. So we went through this like year of like, okay, like thanks Zach. And you know, as an operator and as a guy who believes in their product, it's like, you got to take a deep breath and step back and say, okay, this is only to get us to good, be better, not to bring us, you know, down or whatever. So, and those notes have gotten less and less because of how fast we were able to kind of tackle things. And I guess to your point, like create this experience that just flows, you know, but yeah, I think the important thing is your membership, you know, they got to take pride in the place and what we do and how we do it. And then, you know, they're inviting people to come experience that. And when they keep coming and bringing new people, that's, you know, a sign that, that things are kind of moving in the right direction.
Well, I'll tell you what, my only feedback would be the pro shop needs to be about 10 times bigger because the logos, both the, you know, I'll call it like the alternate, you know, the actual Tree Farm logo. And then the, what do we call it? The tree monster,
the tree monster. The hole in one monster.
The amount of stuff that you guys could do and the amount of stuff that you already have, yeah. I could spend hours and I could only wear Tree Farm logoed stuff. So that's like my only feedback about anything is just get me more Tree Farm logo stuff. It's my favorite logo in golf.
Is that
mainly Zach and like a lot of the stuff he does with like the Buck Club? Cause at least when I was there, kind of the, I'll call it the drop or like what you guys had, there's a lot of Gatorade stuff. And there's a lot of just like other, you know, kind of, you know, different things outside of golf with the logo on it. That I thought was really unique to what you guys are doing. You don't see that in a lot of pro shops.
Yeah, no, totally. I inherited two amazing logos. These were, you know, kind of created before I got started. Zach is one of the more creative guys in golf, in my opinion. You know, built a society of online golfers to potentially build a course in Utah, and still wants to. But in doing that, created like these cool logos and these cool events and, you know, just seasonal, like, you know, he does stuff around Halloween and Christmas and he's got all of these really cool kind of ideas. So from a boss, you know, him being my boss at times, we're just bouncing ideas off each other. And early on it was funny. I wasn't a fan of the Tree Monster when I first started. It was, I remember he presented both logos before I really even took the job, maybe just after I took the job. He's like, you know, what do you think? I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, the tree and moon is so classic, like so perfect for what we're doing. Like, unbelievable. Like, no, like a hoopy onion has all these little lines of in the onion. You got to like detail it. It's so hard to get right on embroidery. I'm like, a solid tree and moon, like perfect. Like,
yeah.
And so I said, and the tree monster is great. We can put it all on the kid stuff and call it a day. And he was like, wait, what? I was like, yeah, no, the tree monster will look good on all the kids' polos and hats. And he's like, I'm like, it'll be perfect. He's like, oh no, like, this is going on more than just kid stuff. I'm like, I don't know. And here I am now. Like, I mean, it's gone berserk. I mean, Brandon Skinner, our lead assistant, always says, he's like, if you're ever in doubt with a piece that you're, you know, half on, half in on, like, just put the tree monster on and send us 24 of them. Like, it'll take care of itself. So yeah, it's become, you know, I think when I first started, we were probably treating it 80-20, maybe 95-5. Now it's, God, it's probably 70-30 now. Tree and Moon 70, Tree Monster 30. And it's, to your point, the shop could be the size of a friggin' Target. And we could just do, hey, you go right for Tree Monster and left for Tree and Moon, and we'll see you at the cash register. But, yeah, no, super, super fortunate. Like you were saying, like, you know, and Zach and our team, we have this ability, I think, to just take some risks and, you know, kind of try to just do stuff that's out of the ordinary, like our Carhartt. You know, we have Carhartt fanny packs, overalls, hoodies. We do beanies in the winter. You know, you can test the water with a cool place, with a cool logo, on some stuff that's really kind of, you know, different. And, you know, I think the other thing too, when COVID happened, golf went crazy, right? And I think a lot of people got golf shirts and vests and plain, you know, apparel during COVID. And, you know, that stuff's still kind of around. So the leisure lifestyle kind of side of golf, which has also just boomed in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, we've kind of just leaned into that and said, okay, like, you know, hats like this maybe aren't really on the golf course. It's more of a lifestyle hat or a lifestyle piece. Like, that has a place in our shop. And people are more apt to kind of buy lifestyle stuff because it's what they, you know, it's what they kind of wear every day. It's not, you know, if they play once a week, they're wearing golf stuff, but the other 6 days or whatever on and off the course, you're hanging and want some cool stuff too with some logos. So it's worked out well.
Yeah. I went a little crazy in there.
Well, rightfully so. I mean, we'll get into it, but I mean, it's a pretty special day you had, so.
Yeah, it was a special day. It was a special couple of days, but yeah. Aside from all the, you know, call it awesome details, and you know, I learned about the, you know, the white flag, red flag with like the hole in ones for the season, all that cool stuff. The actual golf course, some unique things that I noticed. So you guys start on a par 3. I thought that like 16, 17, 18, like those closing three holes, if you're playing in match play, talk about like how quickly things can change, which I thought is awesome. You guys have a drivable par 4, like all the things that make a golf course great. I don't think it's, I would say it's not possible to lose a golf ball out there, but it, you know, it challenges you, but it's also, you know, very, very playable for, I think, everybody.
Yeah.
What's your take on just the golf course in general? I mean, clearly you've played a bunch, and I'm going to ask you questions about Augusta because I know you've played Augusta as well. But maybe talk about just the actual golf course a little bit. I believe Doak helped with it. Obviously, Zach had his say in it. But thoughts on the actual golf course and what you guys hear from everybody?
Yeah. Yeah, the word fun comes back a lot. To your point, you're not going to lose a ton of balls. I think fun is definitely the root, if we had one word to kind of base the golf course on. But it's also like I would say fun, but also like really tasteful, and like you know, there's a lot of history out there, and a lot of, and I say that because, you know, our Kai Golby and Zach and our team like really went out and kind of took all the best things that they found from across the world and what was great in golf course design and what wasn't. And so I think fun, but yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you got Tom Doak doing the routing. That was a pretty special moment for Zach. I know, there was some other people that were involved kind of beforehand, but Kai and ZB actually met at a Hoopie, which was really kind of a cool sidebar. But Kai was like, listen, I think Tom would really love this topography map. It's really, you know, kind of a special, the way the land moves and how the kind of the terrain is. Like, I think Tom would really do an awesome job. So, you know, Tom delivered a routing on Christmas Day to ZB, which was kind of a cool, like, hey, I got your routing, here it is. And actually a lot of the holes that Tom had put together, Zach had already kind of mapped out on his routing, which, you know, Zach doesn't get really, he doesn't get enough credit, I don't think, for how involved he was in the actual, like, design, build, and literally some of the routing. I mean, it was definitely, he definitely knew what he was doing, if you will. And I think you'll see him potentially do some more work down the road because he really is good at it. Like, it's going to be whether he wants to or not, I think it's going to be a post golf, you know, thing for him. Cause he's really, like I said, educated on the whole thing. So, but I know he went to Doak with kind of three things. One was the par 3 start. Two was the drivable par 4 finish, and then he wanted to have Pine Valley's fifth hole replicated, which is our fourth hole. And again, I think just the way that they went around and gathered the good in all these places and kind of what makes them great kind of created a old school, new school version at the Tree Farm. And our land's incredible. To your point, the finish is really well thought out. There's, you know, you're not giving a lot of shots down the stretch too. Like 18 is the 18th handicap, 17, I think, is the 17th or 16th. And then 16 is, you know, your easiest of the par 5. So if you're in a match and you're only given 8 or 10 shots, you're not giving them down the stretch. 17 was a hole that was, you know, they loved 16 green, which is our double punch bowl. You know, really, 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 really cool setting there for a 2 or 3 shot par 5, depending on where we set the tee. And 18 was always where it was because of where the clubhouse kind of, you know, where Alex and his team kind of built the clubhouse into the land. But 17 actually was like, you know, kind of a gem. We just kind of, Kai was just started digging on the right side and built this really cool, you know, kind of sodded wall that, you know, kind of guides the green. It's just ended up being one of our favorite, one of the best par 3s on the property. So you know, you cross the road to 13, and I always tell people, you know, if I'm rangering or taking a ride and I see people on 10 or 9, they're like, hey, this is pretty awesome, like, unbelievable, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it gets really good once you cross the road, because 13 through 18 to me is one of the cooler stretches out there. But, you know, to that point, it's like a proper 18-hole golf course is rhythm, right? Like, the movie starts, you get your intro, you get in your middle of the movie, and then the end, a good movie, you're like, you're on the edge of your seat, and then it ends and you're like, that was awesome. You know, that's kind of, you don't want it to be, hey, the first four holes are the best holes in the golf course. It's like, well, hold on, let's ease you into what we're trying to do here, and then let's have you walk off 18 and be like, that was the most fun I've ever had. So, you know, I think a lot of places don't have that rhythm. And I think we're pretty fortunate of how the round kind of almost gains some traction and some movement. And it just, you know, kind of brings you home, if you will. And it's a pretty cool finish. But yeah, the golf course is really fun. I think that's the word that keeps coming back. And kudos to those guys for just going and searching for what is good in the world of golf, because they brought it all, in my opinion, to this property, and it shows every day for sure.
Yeah, there's something really cool about, like, you know, sitting, I guess you would call it, I think that's the clubhouse, right? That's right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many different little buildings, but the actual clubhouse where you're, you know, you can look one way and see people coming in, you know, with their drives or whatever they're doing on 18. You can look the other way and people are hitting tee shots onto a par three. You know, and there's kind of like the putting green that's right there as well. So it's just,
yeah,
it's a really cool vibe when you have people going off, people coming in, people, you know, grabbing breakfast or lunch right there. And
yeah,
what makes it so special, to your point,
yeah, the lunch scene,
in the same area.
Yeah. The lunch scene, yeah, definitely designed for golf, the F&B. And, you know, Chef Fred's been crushing it. I'll tell you a quick little story. We were during our member guest. I mean, we were just crushing it. It was ton of fun, 72 people, like, big crowd. And I'm starting some groups off, and he's cooking breakfast on the patio, wraps, hash browns, the whole deal. And he's like, yeah, he's talking to a member. He's like, yeah, you know, my main goal is, you know, I want everybody to forget we got golf here. And I kind of turned. I was like, yo. And he was like, oh, he's like, my bad. Like, he didn't see me. I'm like, yo, I'm like, nah, come on. So, like, that's the mentality they take, which is great, you know. And it's, you know, you hear endless things about how good his food is. And, but, you know, that setting of having lunch, and there's some pressure shots, right? You got to hit a 175-yard shot on a par three off the tee after no swing. I mean, you hit the range or whatever, but your first swing of the day is like, you got to square up a 6-iron or whatever. And then, you know, everyone's watching you tee off on 18 and everybody knows it. So those feelings are, you know, Zach had always talked about coming up 18 during the tour event. You know, you got people watching and how cool that is, whether you're in contention, making the cut or missing. And it has those feels around the clubhouse, which is super cool.
Do you have a favorite hole? I want to hear what your favorite hole is.
Yeah, I mean, 18 is as good as it gets from a, you know, grand finale, play it every day. It'd be so cool to, like, have 100 balls and try to make a hole in one, or, you know, make eagle. So 18 is definitely the easy answer. 7, the drivable par 4, you know, kind of all of our, we have like literally very little greenside bunkers on the golf course, and they're all kind of on that one hole, very small green, a good risk reward hole. You know, so yes, 7 and 18, 12 is, you know, I could probably go on, but yeah, I mean, 18, I guess, is probably the answer, just given the theatrical version, you know, side of it, which is just so cool. And everybody gets so pumped and the build up so great to get there. It's just, it's tough not to take 18 every time.
Yeah, that was probably, that's probably mine. I also love 16, the double punch bowl. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen a green like that. And, like, oddly enough, if you don't hit a good tee shot, you can't necessarily go for it in two, because the trees on the right kind of block you out a little bit. So, mm-hmm. I always like when a par 5 that's considered, you know, easy, which I think you said is your 18th handicap, it's relatively easy, makes you hit two good shots to be able to get it on the green in two. It's not just a given that, you know, you get to hit it into this, you know, massive alley, and then all of a sudden you're just looking at a big double punch ball that you can hit it onto. You still got to hit a good drive, and you got to hit a decent second shot to get up there.
I think you hit the nail on the head even just there talking about the tree farm in general, right? There's – it's for the 20 handicap. I mean, he's looking at these fairways, and he's like, let's go. Like, I'm not going to – this is going to be fine. I can bunt it around.
Losing the ball today is going to be good.
Yeah. But, like someone like yourself or like, on Zach's side, like, there's a sliver of fairway that if you hit it, you catch a speed slot and you get the right angle, it makes your second shot that much easier. When you have those two things where it's not like, hey, this is really hard for the high handicap, but the good player is going to have a really good time because it's very, like, bowling alley, strategic, whatever. When you can blend the two, it's like that's when everyone's just having a blast. So it's like, you know, you're able to, you know, kind of be on both ends of it. And I always tell people, if you think the tree farm's easy, we'll play. I'll set the tees. I'll have Nick put the flags. Let me show you what the tree farm, how easy this place is. It's easy because we're setting it up fun for your specific yards and what you're comfortable with. But if you want to go get it out there, you can go have it. I mean,
we hit some, the caddies, you know, we had played, I mean, also the great thing about your guys' course is, you know, like, so we played 18 and then you can play like 1, 2, 3 and just walk in, you know, like there's a couple different,
great.
So
loops.
On hole 2, I think the caddy said, hey, you know, we kind of teed off like up on the hill and hit it between those trees where they said the tee boxes sometimes.
Yeah, on 3, the little dogleg, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Alternate tee.
Yeah, like that alternate tee, I mean, it makes it a long par 4 with a really hard – they're like, yeah, you should see some of the tees that they set up some days. Like they're not normally, you know, like this easy or maybe in these spots. Like hit a tee shot from here, hit a tee shot from here. It just becomes a completely different course that I could see.
Yeah.
You know, I understand it's a destination place, but I could see myself playing that place every single day.
Totally. Yeah. No, absolutely, man. It's certainly fun. And, you know, I always, you know, like moving stuff around and giving people different looks. And, you know, you go to so many tournaments or so many rounds and you hit the same club on the par threes. You know, you hit 7-iron for 4 straight par threes. And it's like, you know, you could hit a sand wedge to a driver on all of our par threes. And, we strategically kind of do that in events in our day to day, and it just makes it fun.
Yeah, I mean the opening hole, if I remember, I hit a lot of 7-irons on 17. You know, it's kind of like a little wedge. 15, depending on where that pin is, obviously it can be all the way in the back on that. Or
What do you know about 15?
That's my hole, man. That's my hole. 205 7-iron all the way to the back left. Back left portion of the green. I told your guy in the pro shop before too. I said I'm gonna make one.
It's the best. That's the best story. Yeah. I mean, I should be interviewing you. I mean that was, you know, we might as well get to it, I guess. But in the shop, asking if we sell Tree Monster flags.
Yes, that happened.
And the answer was like, nope. But if you make a hole-in-one, you can take it off the flag. We only keep – and you're like, really? Like, I'm like, yeah, we got – you know, Brandon and I were like, yeah, we got the tree and moon here. But, yeah, sorry, dude, you got to make a hole-in-one to take the flag.
Yeah, no. So I told him and you had the last actual tree one, so I was going to put it in a simulator. I was like, all right, so hold this one, and if I don't make it, I'll come back and I'll grab it. And I come back. I got both those fuckers. I made a hole in one, exactly. And I in that one, so I could put this one on the plaque and I put one in the garage. You can't make it up, dude. It was phenomenal.
And then you just went off. You were like, I need everything now that I made it.
Yeah,
like, let's go.
I got a lot of tree farm stuff that I wear around. It was.
I was talking to the boys about it. I'm like, man, I'm talking with Jordan. And I like. He's like, I can't. And Brandon's like, yeah, this is so ridiculous that it's never happened. I mean, what are the chances? Obviously, like, I mean, I can look to see how many we've had on 15, but yeah, that was just like super epic, man.
Only way it could be cooler is if it was a red flag. I mean, that's the only way it could be cooler. And I also,
if it was the first,
when I learned about that, so it's the first of every season. So all the flags start red to begin the season. And for you guys, when does that – do you just start the calendar year or when do you start?
Yeah, in September when we reopen, it'll be all red. Yep.
Okay. So they all start red, and then when someone makes a hole in one for that season, you take the red one down, they get it, and then it turns to white.
Yep.
Did I get that right?
Yeah, totally. And honestly, having the white may be more exclusive than having the red if you think about it, you know? It's like someone made one. There's only, I mean, right now we only have four white flags on the course. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, everybody that makes one probably gets a red. We're actually based off of yours, we were talking about, should there be a different color for the third and a different color for the fourth?
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Because we just do white, but we weren't really thinking about the next one. It was like, hey, this is really cool to get it to white, but what if it gets three? And you're like, to white? And you're like, shouldn't it be another color? So
yeah, that's a cool idea. You guys should do something like
so,
that.
So, yeah.
It probably rarely happens all that much, but.
Yeah, we've had a couple where it's like, man, you got to put another white one out. But I'm like, man, if it was like, if the fifth one was like pink, you know, or whatever, and it's like, man, this is the fifth. We had five this year. Like, that could be a cool thing, but yeah, no, I'll never forget that, man. We put that flag in your room in the bag, and someone was like, should we go get that? I'm like, no, leave it. I mean, he'll want everything after this round. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I did. I came back in there and dropped a pretty penny, and I can't wait to come back at some point.
So cool, man.
So I got to ask about you have played Augusta, so you guys are in like a awesome part of the country just for golf in general. We did play Old Barnwell, which is maybe 15-20 minutes from you guys. Also phenomenal.
Unbelievable.
I didn't realize how close you were to Augusta National, maybe a half hour. I did obviously do my due diligence beforehand. So you got to play 36 at Augusta?
Yep, I got to – we arrived. We got a property tour. Really fortunate to know the co-directors of golf there really, really well. One actually I went to college with, and the other has just been a great mentor and a friend. And so we got invited by one of our Hoopy members who's an Augusta National member. And, you know, he had us come up. So we got the tour of the property, and then we had dinner in the clubhouse. They, for whatever reason, thought that I could fall asleep at Augusta National, and that wasn't the case. I was up all night. One of the coolest things in the world for me was every TV on property, you have a remote, just, you know, your standard remote. And, there's a green button on each remote that says Masters, and you just kind of point it at the TV and you click it, and it pulls up an archives of every televised Masters.
That's awesome. In a
Jim Nantz narrated like hour and a half long condensed version of it. So me and Dan Guidarelli, we were in the Firestone cabin where you can smoke cigars inside. So we had wine and a cigar, and we just went through every single Masters for the entire night. Neither of us slept a wink, and yeah, got to run 36 the next day. It was sideways raining when we woke up. And went to breakfast. We were like one of three groups on the property at that time. And so we eat breakfast, freaking the fuck out. Not sure if we're going to play. I'm like, it's pouring. I'm ready. Trying to like either – you can't eat breakfast. Like you're getting ready for the biggest round of your life at the time. And we walked over to the pro shop just to kind of see, hey, is it open? Are we good to – and our host was like, yeah, I'm not going. He's like, do you guys want to wait this out? And we were all like, no, I don't really want to wait it out. So my buddy, who was the lead assistant at the time, got to come join us for the front nine as like our host. So literally got to spend nine holes with one of my best friends in the sideways rain, to start my 36 at Augusta. And when we got to 3T, it cleared up, 65, sunny, bluebird day. And just from hole three on, it was just a pretty perfect day. So our host jumped in and played the middle 18, back nine and front nine. And then, one of the other professionals jumped in for the final nine. We got to play the Masters tee coming in, as the sun was setting. And yeah, it was pretty special, man. I mean, just, you know, you just know every shot, you know, every lie, you know, every corridor, and everything just gets bigger in person. And the greens got smaller in person, which I thought was very kind of interesting. Really? Yeah, I was like, I was anticipating these like massive surfaces and all this crazy movement just because it's like, I don't know, it just shows big on TV, but the place was massive and the greens were like very, very tiny to me, which I thought was, you know, kind of interesting. But yeah, it was a treat, man. I mean, golly, we played it in between. They had a fall Masters and a spring Masters. So we were kind of playing it with all the grandstands and the signage was still up. Left of 11, they had the scoreboard still up and stuff. So yeah, it was pretty special, as you can imagine.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I've walked it one time for a practice round. It's what I tell everybody, like, it just kind of takes your breath away. There's a couple places like that, and it just did. Like, you're just on property walking around, just like, what? I mean, I can't imagine what it'd be like to play it, but it just it's one of those breathtaking, special places.
Yeah, I got a tip actually from another guy that had been there that said, he was like, we were going, and he's like, oh, dude, enjoy it. He's like, you like run? I'm like, me? Like, no, like from the cops in high school? Like, yeah, maybe, but not now. And he said, well, if you bring like running shoes and like a workout outfit and put your headphones in the morning, you can run the cart path and like pretend like you're exercising, like all the members do. Guests that like, you know, kind of want to like get a workout in before, there's a little gym down by the par three course. And he was like, a buddy of mine did it, told me I did it. I don't run either, but it was like, I just watched the sunrise at Augusta and I was the only one out there. I'm like, wow. Like, okay. So I brought my stuff, did the whole thing. So at like 5 a.m., I'm literally at like, again, haven't slept. I'm like suited up, like I'm fucking running the Boston Marathon. And so I zip out the back of the cottage. I got my headphones in, no music playing. And I ran like the back nine with like nobody there as like the sun was coming up. And the ground screws out there, whatever, doing their thing. But like, I was legitimately like numb, just like seeing the property that early as the sun was coming up, like poking through the trees. And it was just, it was like one of the, I tell everybody, if you're going, like PSA, if you're going to Augusta, you can run in the morning. Like, I don't care if you've never run in your life. It was pretty special. So I remember walking to the shop and one of the pros was like, pro, how was your run this morning? He's like, yeah, you guys know everything. Sorry. Like, sorry about that. But,
yeah,
but
it was,
yeah. Yeah. So like, how was your run? But yeah, it was good. So yeah, it was just amazing stretch for sure. Yeah, haven't been back since. Been back, went to Berkman's this year with the wife, and we had a day kind of checking out Berkman's and watching a Hoopie member take home the green jacket, which fired us up. And yeah, so it was good.
Berkman's is sweet. I got to do that too. Did you guys do the putting? Well, you've played it, but
yeah,
how cool is like the putting experience? I was going to say, yeah, you get to put all the red ones. Like, yeah, you played it. But that place is really cool. I remember doing that. And I think I four put all those greens.
Totally. Yeah. No, it was funny. I was blown away with, so we went, obviously you have a bunch of food and the TVs, you know, are there. And, we were in one of the bars, I think it was like the Augusta Seafood or whatever it was. And it was amazing to be in a bar with TVs volume and nobody having their phone and just being like locked into like what sporting event was going on the TV. Like, you go to so many bars and it's like a group of people, like a couple of people are on their phone, girls are chatting or whatever. And it's not like there could be multiple games on and someone's trying to watch one, or everybody was at this one bar, like locked in, cheering, high-fiving with no escape to be like, I got to check this or check that. It was like, it was a different side of like the no phone thing, which I thought was really cool.
And arguably too, it's the one place you can actually like see what's going on, right? Because when you're out there, you can't really see, like you're following obviously a group and you kind of know and people are talking, but like when you're Berkman, like you can see everything and like you're actually watching a broadcast, you see like the shots. And that's the one thing I took away from there. And we were just there on a Wednesday practice round, but like we had seen, it was the day, I can't remember what year it was, maybe 2018, the year before Tiger won, I think, when Finau had rolled his ankle after his hole in one. I think Nicholas's son had made his hole in one on the par three. Like, there's just all this other stuff going on. Like, you could actually see it when you were in there, as opposed to, like, when you're on the course, you got no idea what's going on other than your little world.
Yeah, something's wrong with that, too. I mean, we could go on about the patron experience, but, you know, I love tradition and love what Augusta, you know, the Masters brings. But if you go as a patron and you're a fan of the tournament, it's really hard to, like, lock into what's going on tournament days. Now, being a fan of Augusta National, like we all are, it's a treat to go there, right? You get to walk over the whole place and see the surrounds and see, you know, kind of how everything moves. But to your point, you don't really know what's going on, as, you know, as opposed to being at a US Open or a PGA or whatever, where you can really kind of, oh, hey, so-and-so just made a birdie, we got to run and go check this out, or, you know, so yeah, it's super interesting. Definitely. We knew that on 16 green, which is right off the back entrance of Berkman's, it was time to go watch Rory play 17 and 18. So it was nice to have that, you know, kind of luxury. But yeah, totally. It's pretty dialed in up there, that's for sure.
All right. Well, as we wrap up, speaking of US Open, this will go out today's Monday. This will go out Thursday. Mm-hmm. You got to pick somebody not Scottie Scheffler. I also just want to hear your thoughts on Oakmont. I imagine you, as a PGA pro, have, you know, heard all the rumblings about how hard it's going to be, the long rough, all that stuff. I did see they were giving it a little cut today, which is probably a good thing. But thoughts on Oakmont this week? Maybe thoughts on the course, and then who are you picking if you can't pick Scotty, even though everybody's picking Scotty?
Yeah, no, I've been never been to Oakmont. We have a Methodist alumni, Devin Gee, is kind of the guy up there. He replaced Bob, and we've had a bunch of Methodist alumni kind of work there, and people just rave and rave about the golf course. And, you know, one, how fair it actually is and how challenging it is. Kai Golby, who helped build the tree farm with Zach, he was part of Gil Hance's team that did the restoration and built some tees, and they did some work up there. Probably, I don't know how many years ago, but was there helping. So, you know, I know Zach's excited just to see what Kai did out there, because obviously, you know, ZB got in this week, and, you know, Kai is just our guy. So, and his guy. So it'd be cool to kind of for him to go out and swing it on Kai's work. But yeah, no, I've heard a lot about the weather's been kind of bad. They've gotten a bunch of rain, which, again, anybody that's played bent grass and in the rain, whether you're at Oakmont or you're Pittsburgh National down the Muni down the road, whatever the Muni in the area is, it's going to be tough, right? So I know they have, like, personalized designed mowers to mow the rough, and, you know, they push mow. They don't run, you know, your normal kind of mowers through. So I think they'll be able to control, you know, kind of how it plays and how the ball reacts. And, you know, again, to your point of whether they were cutting today or whatever, they'll be mindful of not making it wonky, just because I think the US Open is the king of that. Obviously, they've had a few instances where tournaments have gotten away from them. But at the end of the day, it's the hardest test in golf. Not sure if it's the strongest field in golf, but it's close. And I think it's supposed to be the hardest test. I think, you know, they I guess the tour and some majors haven't had the greatest success over the last, you know, couple years in terms of, you know, the PGA Tour just hasn't handled anything proper, and the golf courses haven't been great that they choose to compete on. So I think the hype and the energy around this is for good reason, which I think is thank God, right? It's like, can we have another event that we have to bash the golf course? It's like, come on, like, let's just figure this thing out. So, you know, I think it'll be fun to root for the course, you know, Big Cat and, PFT on Pardon My Take. I'm not sure if you listen to those guys, but they're always, like, rooting for the course. I think this will be a fun week to root for the course. But my pick, other than Scotty, got to go with Zach Blair, right? I mean, he's going to be repping TTF, repping Tree Farm.
I was following his he was showing all the stuff that's in his bag, and I saw one of the tree farm head covers, and I liked it. And I had sent him a message when I made my ace, and he actually responded. I was all giddy. He was like super happy.
He's like total dude.
I'm a big fan now.
Yeah, loves the tree farm. You know, anytime you're working, right, and there's something else in your life that you can kind of use to, I wouldn't say distract him, or, you know, it's just a really cool thing that he can, you know, check in on and hear feedback from. He loves hearing about people's experiences. So if you've ever been to the tree farm and you message him about the tree farm, 100% is going to respond and chat with you about it, which I think is super cool. So I'll take ZB. I think if you watch what happened at Wingfoot with Bryson, I think you'll probably see him be in contention just from a shot shaper's bomber's paradise that this could turn out to be. And he's got that driver on a string. So and I actually enjoy watching him play these courses because I think it brings the best of his game, which, you know, is the top three or four in the game. So, I think it's going to be fun, man. I've got a bunch of great stories. You know, James Nicholas, a good friend of mine, got in through locals. You know, Zach, obviously, got some fun storylines, and I think it's going to be a good week. Hopefully, it's all about the weather, man. I mean, you can't really do much. You can do everything, but, you know, figure out the weather. You just got to take that in the chin and kind of, you know, go from there. But yeah, it should be a fun one.
You think it'll be over par winning score?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's all condition driven, right? I think Bob Ford said it's either going to be -5 or +5, and it's all going to depend on the condition. So if it's firm and fast, it'll be +5, and if it's receptive and a little bit slower, it'll be -5. I think that was kind of the last, you know, I heard from a guy who spent a bunch of time there. So yeah, I think if they get it to where they want it to, you'll see a plus two or three final. I think I was watching something, forget who it was, somebody on tour, and he was like, I think it was on the Barstool guys. They were like, if you could take +4, would you take it? Was it Griffin? Yeah. He's like, yeah, I'll take +4 all day and see where. I'm like, all right, that's cool. Like, I'm in on that. So
yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think those guys are so good. You just never know when someone will put up like a number, and then they can kind of, you know, not cruise, but, you know, only shoot like one or two over the other days. And I'm excited to watch. But I appreciate your time for coming on. I know how busy you are.
I appreciate your golf course.
Love you. Love your staff. Love everything you guys are about. I hope I'm back there someday, confident that I will be. And hopefully when I am, we get to connect again in person. Yep. So truly appreciate all of it, man.
No, absolutely, man. We appreciate you. And this is kind of what we're all about, right? You know, creating a cool experience for someone, something amazing like a hole-in-one on 15 happens. You happen to have a platform to talk golf, and I couldn't have been more pumped to come on and hang out. So appreciate you. And, hopefully we'll be able to maybe do a live show at the club and get you guys down for another overnight.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I mean, I've already told my fiancé we're getting married this October.
Oh, nice.
I'm like, babe, I found my destination golf course that I'd like to be a part of one day. And she's like, all right, well, you know, let's maybe get through the wedding and maybe some other stuff first. I'm like, yeah, totally fair. I'm just kind of putting it on your radar, you know,
for
future consideration. So,
dude, congrats. Yeah. I just celebrated 1 year with my wife, and it's been amazing. You know, wedding planning, it's like you lead up and then all of a sudden it's like the greatest 5 hours of your life. And then everyone's like, all right, see you later. You're like,
yeah, all right, guys, it's 11 or 12 p.m. And you're like, what, we're done? That's it.
Yeah.
We have that same feeling. We're trying to enjoy the process and know that, you know, it'll come and it'll go. And then I did see you guys got married at the place that we had stayed at. We were in town.
Oh, the Wilcox, you guys stayed there?
Yeah, that's where we stayed when we were in town. Yeah, beautiful place. It was awesome.
It was awesome, yeah.
It felt like, okay, I'm experiencing South Carolina. Like,
yeah, 100%.
I'm here. This place is awesome.
Big time, yeah. And, you know, being from Boston, you got, you know, I'd say 75% of the guest list was coming from north of the Mason-Dixon line. And it was very funny to watch a bunch of Boston people in there just tearing it up. And yeah, super fortunate to, you know, we go there all the time for our, you know, just dinners and celebrations, and fortunate to have it in our backyard. But, you know, carve out some time for you guys. You know, I think that was the best advice I got, was we actually, so we got married, had the ceremony, and then as everybody went to cocktail hour, we snuck upstairs and had our own little dinner and had some food and a glass of wine, and felt like we had to rehearse our dance 19 times. So it kind of cut into the time that we were supposed to have a quick bite to eat. But, you know, the best advice I got was to carve out some alone time and really, you know, kind of look each other in the eye and enjoy it, because it's a friggin' whirlwind, but it's a blast. So,
yeah, man, I appreciate that. Appreciate you. And I'm sure we'll talk again soon. And thank you for joining Member Guest Podcast.
Yep, absolutely. Hey, every day's a member guest at the Tree Farm. So do the same at your home club.
I love that. Thanks, Drew.
Thanks, brother.